The Copywriter Club podcast is sponsored by AirStory, the writing platform for professional writers who want to get more done in half the time. Learn more at airstory.co/club.
What if you could hang out with seriously talented copywriters and other experts, ask them about their successes and failures, their work processes, and their habits, then steal an idea or two to inspire your own work? That's what Rob and I do every week at the Copywriter Club podcast.
You're invited to join the club for episode 20, as Kira and I talk about our favorite advice from several episodes of the podcast and how we're applying it in our businesses.
Hi, Rob.
Hey, Kira. How's it going?
It's fantastic.
Yeah, today's a really good day.
Today is a great day. Yeah, we're pumped up from our previous interview and conversation that was just really, gosh, it just gets me so excited about what we're doing.
Yeah, I'm the same way. It's like every time we talk to another expert, another copywriter who's doing really smart things with their business, I just get so excited. I get off the interview. It makes me, you know, more excited about the work that I'm doing, you know, the clients that I'm working for, the stuff that we're doing in the Facebook group and all that stuff. This has been an awesome, fun project that we've been working on.
Yeah, totally. And I think, so today's episode is really discussing some of the major highlights from the past 20 shows. And I think we'll jump around a bit. We're probably going to miss some of them, but, and also talking about the way that we've already integrated some of these changes or some of these lessons into our own businesses. Some of them we have not. They're mostly ones that are still on my list of things to do, but I have implemented a couple and I know you have as well.
Yeah. Before we do that though, we want to cover two things. The first is that for everybody who's listening, if you haven't already taken the opportunity to leave a rating or a review in iTunes, if you would please, we know you might be driving, pull over, park the car, go to iTunes, leave us a review, click, you know, we'd love to say if it's 5 stars, but even if it's not, we really want that feedback for two reasons. One, it tells us that you're listening and that you enjoy what we're doing. And two, it really does help other people find the podcast. When there are a lot of reviews, Apple moves it to the top of the list. There are a couple of podcasts, good podcasts for other writers, and we just want to be ranked among those. And so if you take a minute to rate us in iTunes, or if you use Stitcher on Stitcher, that would be fantastic.
And also, if you could join the Facebook group, the Copywriter Club Facebook group, we have around 800 people in the group already. And if you're in there, you know it's an incredible conversation and a really zen, positive vibe that we will maintain. Rob is our bouncer, and he will kick you out if you are a jerk. So anyway, it's really incredible. I'm learning a ton in there. I can't actually keep up with it because there's so much valuable information. I have to go back and like copy and paste everything I'm learning.
Yeah, there are a few members who have put, you know, comments and advice that are so good. I don't even know how to compare it. It's like being in a mastermind group with some super smart people, and they'll, you know, make that comment. And I think, wow, I'm copying that into a document to, you know, use for later. You know, if it's advice about pricing or how to brand your business or position yourself in the market, there's just been so much good stuff. There have even been people who've shared projects that they couldn't get to, clients, you know, that they're sharing with other writers who might have time. It's been a fantastic group. So I agree. Get in there and participate. We can all learn from each other. So Kira, this episode, we want to talk about our favorite moments from the first 19 episodes, I guess, since this is our 20th. We've talked to some really smart people. We've had a lot of really great advice. Let's start with your favorite.
I don't know if this is my favorite because but this is the one that I've implemented already. So it's worth sharing first. And it's with one of my favorite people, Joanna Weeb. So in our conversation with Joanna, we asked her, you know, how we can kind of up-level our copywriting and charge more. And she said, you need to really, really own the process and kind of manage your client and the entire process. And part of that is presenting your copy and doing it in such a way that you, again, are owning that process. Do it in such a way that you are the leader and it's well organized and it's well thought out and that it doesn't put a question in your client's mind of, oh, they don't know what they're doing, or I should take ownership of this and tell them what changes they need to make. So the way she explained it is really brilliant. And since hearing that, I did actually test it, even though I was a little bit scared to do so, because typically I just will send my copy, pull it into a Google Doc and send it and say, hey, here you go. You have a couple days to review and comment back, and then I'll work on the final draft. And with one of my current clients, I actually changed it up and I said, hey, I would really like to have a touch point with you, jump on Skype, and I'll share the copy with you and present it. And I did let her know that this was my first time doing it, so I was transparent. It kind of gave me some relief to just be transparent with her. And so this is something I'm testing. I think it's a good way to go. So I did it. I was nervous presenting my copy, and I kind of felt like I should think it out before I do it again as to what I should share and how I should share it, because I felt a little bit awkward. But I did it. I think it's important. I want to continue doing it, and I want to take it a step further and really think about touch points with client projects and how I can just take it to the next level and even have a VA help manage projects so that I'm not dropping the ball, which I have definitely.
How did your client react to the presentation?
She was very quiet. And what Joanna did say, because I was going back through the notes, is that you should share the copy an hour beforehand, before you get on the call. And I did not do that. I guess I did not remember that part. So I just shared it for the first time on the call. So next time I will share it beforehand. Anyway, so it was the first time she saw it, and it was a very personal, especially the way I started this sales page was super personal and like revealing this part of her past that she still feels uncomfortable sharing. So she was just quiet.
Right. Well, that's an agency trick. It's not a trick. That's an agency process. You know, if you go to an ad agency or design agency, they wouldn't just send you an email with the work. You know, they'll always right. sit down and present it and tell, you know, talk through the strategy and that sort of thing. So I think that's some of my favorite advice as well that we've heard in all of the episodes.
Yeah. And I will say, you know, just be prepared for it to be potentially uncomfortable or awkward the first time. I feel like it might get easier. But when she did speak, this client did speak, she did say, you know, she got teary-eyed and that she really liked it. And then, we moved forward from there. So it was a positive experience, and I'd recommend trying it. So what about you, Rob? What really stood out to you, and what have you implemented so far?
My favorite piece of advice, and it's one that I have implemented, came from Ben Settle's show. And Ben Settle is kind of a controversial character. There are a lot of people who don't react well to his shtick, his personality, and the way he talks. But if you set that aside and just take the advice, he knows a lot of stuff about email marketing and marketing in general. And one of the things he told us was that when he finds a really good book, that he'll read it, you know, 5, 6, maybe even 10 times in a row to really internalize the information that's in the book so that, you know, it just becomes a natural part of the way he thinks, what he can offer clients, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so I thought, I'm going to try that. And I had it sitting on my desk already, Dan Kennedy's Ultimate Sales Letter. And I said, I'm going to read this one, you know, 5 or 6 times and sort of see what happens when I do that. And I've done it. I'm on my 5th time through. You know, I've underlined tons of notes. I've started writing notes into a notebook to, you know, try to understand it even better. And I actually think that this advice is so good. I understand more from reading that book, and it's changed the way I thought even about landing pages that, you know, I work on. Even little things that might not stand out the first time that you read through it, but by the 4th or 5th, you start to notice, oh yeah, this little trick is actually pretty cool and can do something different. And so that is, of everything that we've heard, and we've heard some really good advice over the last few episodes, that's the one that I have really started to make part of my business and recommend that other people should do the same. So I've got this list of books that I'm going to get to next. I've started through Brian Kurtz's Advertising Solution, and I'm going to read that one 4 or 5 times. Breakthrough Advertising's on my list to reread again several times this year. Basically, all of these old direct marketing masters and copywriters. That's where I'm starting. My personal reading for the next few months is only going to be rereading these classics several times, taking copious notes and trying to internalize the information that's there.
Oh, yeah. And I think Ben Settle actually said that he's read Breakthrough Advertising by Gene Schwartz 19 or 20 times.
Yeah, that's a crazy number.
When I heard that, it was just shocking because I have never gone that deep on a book. And so I think it also takes the pressure off. I know I feel pressured to keep up and read all these books, and I barely have time to breathe most of the time. So if I could just take one book and go deep for a year and not worry about keeping up with everything else, it feels manageable to me. But, you know, Rob, what book would you recommend for me? Because I feel like I'm only now tapping into these legendary copywriters and the direct response world. And I need to get into that world. I know it's important and I'm excited about it. So where should I start?
Everybody says that you should start with Claude Hopkins. I'm not sure that I agree with that. I think that's a great place to start and it's very basic. But from where you are in your business and what I know about you, I would even say Joanna Wiebe's The Dark Arts of Long Form Sales Pages would be a good one to read and reread. And that's on my list as well. I think The Ultimate Sales Letter by Dan Kennedy is a really good one if you're writing landing pages and sales letters, that kind of stuff. That one should be on there. And Brian Kurtz's book, like I mentioned earlier, that's probably a really good one. The thing I like about that book is that it sort of kernelizes the teachings of six different classic copywriters, and it makes it really understandable. And it's become, really, for me, it's one of my favorite books that I've read about copywriting. So there's some good stuff there. So that's, I'll share my whole list with you via email maybe, but that's a good place to start.
Okay, perfect.
So next, what other ideas have really stood out to you?
Okay, well, this is a big one, and it's not new, but it definitely keeps popping into my mind. So basically with Amy Posner, we interviewed her. I'm not sure of the actual number of the episode, but I've worked with Amy on a couple different projects now. We've collaborated on different clients that she's brought in or that I've brought in. And it just has reminded me of the power of collaboration. And I know that's a big part of the club. And now we have this thriving club where we're sharing processes and we're sharing information and rates. And people are really stepping up and sharing vulnerable information, which is incredible. And I think we could even take it a step further and start working on projects together. Because I know from working with you and working with Amy and other copywriters, every time I do that, not only is my final product, the copy, that much better, but it's also I'm learning these little details that I just could improve upon, like how to make my bullets even stronger. Amy's helped me with that. And I think when you get into a document and like you're in there with someone who is at your level or more experienced or maybe even less experienced, but they just have a different background.
And bringing the beginner mind, right?
Yeah, you will learn something new. And so I know that's a big part of what I'm working on is just kind of seeing my projects as collaborations and that I want to bring in the best people. And maybe it's just like hiring someone to come in and add a sense of humor. Like it's bringing Leanna Patch into the mix and being like, hey, can you help me make this funnier? And just kind of seeing it like as every work of art as a way to bring in the best people and then also learn and have an incredible final product.
We see it in the mastermind group that we participate in, but every time people share copy or when I've relied on people like Jen Havice, who we interviewed about research, she's always, and you, I get so much good feedback, angles that I hadn't considered, you know, maybe it's just a tweak of a headline or a subhead that just makes it that much better. I totally agree with you. Working with another writer can make a huge difference in the quality of your copy. It's hard to price in, you know, because you can't always just rely on, you know, if it's more than say, hey, check this out, 10, 15 minutes, whatever, people need to be paid for their time.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But if you can figure out a way to make that work within your project budget and scope, it's definitely worth doing.
Yeah, and I'm definitely not saying like rely on these people and don't pay them. I think there are a couple people I know, you know, we'll go back and forth and we just help each other out. And I think, Rob, we have that relationship. We'll just help each other out.
Right.
But, you know, everyone else gets paid for their time. And I think it's also fun to help support other copywriters and like to pass money around so we're all getting paid. I think that just feels really good too.
Yeah, I agree. Now, having said that, the few copywriters that have reached out to me in the past, I don't want them to feel guilty that they didn't offer, you know, that's not what I'm saying. You know, those relationships are worth maintaining, and sharing information is just, you know, part of that. So,
yeah. So what else for you, Rob?
Another idea that really jumped out at me that I've adopted is when we talked with Tarzan K in episode 9 about her postcard project.
Yeah.
I thought, you know what, this is something that I'm definitely going to do. And so almost immediately I went online and I ordered some thank you cards, you know, with the Copywriter Club logo on them, and have started using those, you know, as thank yous to people that we've talked to. And I'm going to now, you know, adopt actually the postcard idea and use those to send to clients, to, you know, people that I'm interacting with in other ways. I just think that that personal communication offline in the mail is so huge. And when Tarzan was talking about the difference that it's made for her, it was just like a light bulb went off in my office. I'm like, okay, I really need to do this and I need to build those connections. And so I've been doing it. We've, you know, sent out thank you cards to most of the people that we've talked to on our episode so far. And it's something that we're going to continue to do and find other opportunities to interact with people through actual hand-delivered mail and expressing those personal feelings and you know, heartfelt thanks for what people have helped us do.
Yeah, and I give you credit because you really did do it. You created the cards for the club, and I know I still need to print them out. I'm a little bit behind there, but I think, you know, receiving a postcard from Tarzan with a really, really solid, nice, thoughtful message just was very touching. And I just remember getting it. I was like, I love Tarzan. It just will bring you closer to the people that you're sending them to, and in such an incredible way. And I was even thinking, wow, what if I could do that with my mail or my email list? And especially, I'm still starting with a small list. You know, do we request mailing addresses? Do we ask our list to submit that? Will people do that? I kind of wonder if that's a good direction to go and how we can collect that information at large.
So if you're on Kira's list and you want to get a postcard from her, send her your address. Let her know you want to hear from her. Right. At the very least, tell her to send you an email, because that's something that she could do as well.
I kind of felt like that might come up. Yeah, you probably don't know if you're on my list, because you wouldn't know, because you don't hear from me at all. Which actually we talked about with Laura Belgray,
right?
Because she is excellent at emailing her list with fantastic stories every week, and they're always entertaining. So I was able to ask Laura, you know, how should I handle this if I haven't emailed my list yet? What's the best way to jump back into that? And I'm sure there are copywriters that are listening that have not or do not email regularly. And she said, you know, just kind of make a joke out of it and just jump back in and move on and don't dwell on it. And people probably don't even care or realize. So just provide them with something, entertainment, content, value, inspiration, something, and move on.
So now the trick is just finding the time to do it, right?
Right. It's making it a priority. I mean, I think it's just all about, what are your priorities? And so far, I feel like each month, I've been looking at each month like a year. Like, what can I accomplish in this month that makes it feel like I've accomplished these great things throughout an entire year? And I've been pretty good. I know we're only 2 months in. I've been pretty solid. But emailing my list has not been on that list. So I just would say it's not a priority for me right now. Maybe that's bad. You're good at it.
I do email my list every week. Sometimes it's better than other times, but that's definitely something that I try to make a priority. I've done it for almost 2 years now, and it takes a lot of time. It takes effort. But in the end, the feedback that I get from a lot of people who are on my list just makes it, you know, really worthwhile. I love hearing from people who are like, hey, that idea really struck home, or, you know, whatever that feedback is, it's just sort of gratifying when you hear back from people who are reading what you write.
Yeah. And what else? Tarzan also mentioned having a VA and hiring a VA, and how not only has that helped her create systems in her business and also offloaded a lot of work, but it change or created a shift in her clients' perception of her, and even has helped her increase her rates, because people look at you differently when you have someone basically like answering the phone for you and responding to emails for you. And so that really stuck with me as well, because I do have a VA on my team, but I've been very slow to ramp that up and to bring to basically invite her to help me with multiple projects, because that takes time, right? Even training someone or helping them support you takes time. And so I think after speaking with Tarzan about that, I was more determined to actually help my VA help me. And I think just showing the impact of how that could help you increase your rates is really important. Maybe the catalyst that other copywriters need to take that step.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting, that having the VA made her clients perceive her as a real business and not just a freelance copywriter.
It works. I know I view people differently when they have someone else responding to their emails or running their projects. I can't help it. I look at that their business differently.
So that's something I've sort of been averse to having a VA help me, but maybe that's something I need to look into on my own business.
Maybe, but if you're running, you know, if your systems are running smoothly and you're happy and things are going well,
I need a VA
not.
For my life. Maybe that's just keep me on course.
Yeah. So what else stood out to you, Rob? Well,
another one that I want to mention, because I do this in my own business. I didn't start after we talked to her, but I did start after I got to know her. And that's Jen Haweiss talked about her research process. And that's something that she shared a year ago when she published her book. She shared it with me. And I use this book, her book, so often when I'm thinking through what kind of research do I want to do, when I'm starting with a new client and trying to think through what questions do I need the customer to answer, the client's customer that I'm actually writing for, what questions do I need from the client, how do you do research like message mining. Her book is short, it's simple, but that one book may have contributed more to my business over the last year and a half or so than anything else. And so the advice that she drops in her episode was fantastic. And I guess if anybody wants to get on, listen to that, that was episode 12. And anybody who hasn't got her book really should head to Amazon and buy it now.
I have used her book as well. I have it. I don't go back to it as often now, only because I think it's finally all in my head, although I should revisit it. But I use Jen's research processes as well. And that, I think, her research process has elevated my business and helped me kind of finally just feel like I can really bring something to the table when I'm working with clients. I feel like I can back up what I'm doing now because I have the proof and I have everything I need to do the job correctly.
Exactly. It may not apply to somebody who's writing blog posts quite as much as somebody who may be doing, launch videos or sales type copy, but I can't think of a copywriter who wouldn't benefit from reading it at least once.
Well, and what's interesting is popping up in our conversations, and maybe there's some of the conversations that are post episode 20, but it's about, the copywriters that are going to be like the $1 million copywriters are really owning their niche. And so even if you are focused on, white papers and blog content, and maybe you haven't integrated surveying into your process, maybe we all should become those experts and have all the survey responses and data about our audience before we tackle any project. Maybe that's kind of the way of the future of copywriting, is like just having that so you know more about your client's audience than they do. I mean, how much power is that when you can say, I know this, I've learned this about your audience, and then you start providing those aha moments for your clients.
We interrupt this program for a message from our sponsor. As we noted at the top of the program, the Copywriter Club podcast is sponsored by AirStory. Recently, Kira had a chance to talk to copywriter Lisa Pearson about how she uses AirStory in her business. This is just a part of that discussion.
What should other copywriters know about AirStory?
Some of us are a little ADD or our minds wander, and it really helps you focus. You can do all of your research ahead of time. You can add it all to cards, so it's right there in your document. You don't need to leave your document once you start writing. So I love that I can do all of my research, have it in my cards, and focus on the work. My name's Lisa Pearson. I'm a conversion copywriter and strategist, and I love using AirStory to keep me focused and on task when I'm working on my projects.
All right. What's another takeaway from a previous podcast?
Okay. From Rye Schwartz, of course. It was a great interview.
I was hoping you'd leave Rye for me.
We might have different takeaways because, of course, there were a lot from that episode. But I took away just going deeper. And so, especially since we're talking about the research, you know, Rye mentioned, yeah, it's great to collect the survey responses and to really dig into those. But what if you can dig deeper and kind of understand what's behind those survey responses? And, you know, I think he says, just sit with it long enough to pierce below that surface and ask questions about that will allow you to think deeper and kind of make connections that may not be relevant when you first review the survey responses. And so I don't know if I've actually started doing that, but I think it's just something that I need to consider. What does that mean to me? And how can I start doing that in my research process? And part of that too is I know people in the club have said, I want to spend more time on research and interviewing, but it takes so much time. I'm not charging enough to warrant that time. So I think it's tricky. And maybe that's, you know, if you want to beef up this process, you do increase your rates so that you can support it and you can allot that time to this process and going deeper without feeling like you have to cram in 20 projects in a month and then you don't have time to breathe.
And I think when you read Rye's copy, you see that he does that really well. You know, in the emails that he does for Amy Porterhouse, it's Porterfield. Almost, or sorry, Porterfield, Porterhouse, that she should slap me for that. But you can read those and it's almost like he's in your head. You know, he really understands her basic customer and what they're looking for. And I think ultimately that translates into sales.
Yeah, definitely.
So I have another takeaway from Rye's episode. And that is towards the beginning of the episode, he talked about the process of helping the customer to forgive themselves of the actions that they've taken in the past. Because so many of the customers that we are writing for have purchased products in the past that didn't work, or try diet plans or whatever the thing is that is going to solve their problem and it doesn't work. And partly because of that, they are sort of, it's not really angry, but they feel guilty that, you know, I've tried to improve and I've failed and this next thing is going to be just more of the same. And Rye basically says, look, we need to give the people writing our copy permission to forgive themselves of the stuff that they've tried in the past. They were doing the best that they could using the best information that they had. And for whatever reason, it didn't work, but that doesn't mean that the next thing can't work. Obviously, we don't want to use that manipulatively, but we need to be able to help customers sort of move past the mistakes and the failures that they've had so that they can find the one thing that's going to help them solve whatever the pain is that they have.
Yeah, and I have definitely started doing that. I think that's really powerful. I think Rye is really good at writing copy that empowers the reader to feel like they can do X, Y, and Z. I think he's built a really good process to do that. And so I try to incorporate that in my sales page copy. Let's see. I was going to bring up Jessica Mehring's interview because I actually took a lot of notes from that interview. She mentions, you know, really the copywriters that are great, and she's based this off of what she's heard from her clients. So Jess will actually ask her clients, you know, what separates the good copywriters from the great copywriters? And I know she's collected a lot of valuable information around that. And what she was willing to share with us was that the great copywriters really understand their client. And this is kind of what we touched on earlier, but if you can understand the company, the beliefs, their audience just as well or better than the client, that's how you really do great work and you stand out to that client.
Jessica has worked with, you know, in a coaching situation with other writers as well. So she knows what she's talking about.
Yeah. And it seems so obvious, even as I'm saying it now, like that just sounds obvious, but we don't always do it. And I know I don't always do that, but you have to kind of go in with that mindset of when you start a project, how can I understand everything I need to understand? I think it's just a mindset shift, and I don't know if it's an easy switch. I guess I'll have to figure that out, but it's a good reminder.
I think another sort of no duh moment from the podcast was in episode one when Kaylee Moore was talking about how she gets to know influencers when she's doing outreach for guest posting and just trying to find, you know, more publicity for her work. And she talked about how she uses Twitter not to make pitches, but to create relationships, you know, where she'll start following people, she'll respond to funny things that they might say, or, you know, a comment that's applicable to a topic that they're covering. If they post an article, she'll respond and say, hey, you know, great article, and really try to develop a relationship. So that down the line, when she's ready to make that pitch, she can reach out to that person and say, hey, you know, I had a few ideas. Do you want me to run them by you? And the person immediately recognizes that Kaylee is this person they've been interacting with and has a relationship. And of course, the answer is going to be sure. And if the things that she is pitching to them work for the audience, it's almost a no-brainer for the person that she now has a relationship with to say, yeah, let's do it. And she's done that to get posts on Copy Hackers and on the Crazy Egg blog, and I think AppSumo blog, even entrepreneur.com, and it's worked really well for her. And that was another one of those things. It's like, well, of course that's how you do it, but right, we don't always do it that way, because we think, hey, let's just make a pitch, and it falls flat because we don't have that relationship.
Yeah, and even as you're saying this, I'm like, well, I haven't really done this since chatting with Kaylee about it. But I think it does translate into all forms of social media. So even I spend more time on Instagram, but even just building relationships through Instagram, you know, when something as simple as when somebody comments on your image, commenting back to them is really powerful. And it's something I don't always make time to do, even though I don't have a huge following. I should make time to do that. But just that's where you can build these relationships with people that maybe aren't in your circle, or they are in your circle, but they want to get to know you better. And I know some of the bigger influencers in Instagram, like Jasmine Starr, she comments back on every comment, and she has a huge following. So it's like, if she can do it, she's a busy lady, we can all do it regardless of the platform.
Okay, yeah. How about another idea?
When we were chatting with Lacey about her brand, I think it was just a really great reminder that your brand can impact your bottom line. And I don't have all the stats. I know Lacey shared some of the stats on her show about how it impacted her numbers. And I know she mentioned that her list doubled since she relaunched her brand. But for me, you know, as someone who has, I've branded recently in the last year, and I saw the results of my business just reaching, attracting clients I never would have attracted before I had this new brand. I know the impact. It's real, and it does lead to dollar signs, and not to mention just finding the right people and attracting the right people who get you and like you. And I personally think, and this is like me on a soapbox, but I think the copywriters, you know, that will really stand out are going to be the ones that know how to brand themselves and understand like what they're bringing to the table and what they do really well and maybe what they don't do. And I think having that self-awareness and then integrating it into a brand will go really far.
Yeah, it's interesting. In the Copywriter Club Facebook group, several people have mentioned a few writers over and over because they've got really strong brands, you know, so they click onto their sites just to see what other writers are doing. Lacey's site has just such a strong brand voice and a visual look that supports it. Hers gets mentioned almost every time. Your site, Kira, gets mentioned a lot because you've got such a strong brand voice and a very unique look to your site. And I'm a little bit sad that nobody ever mentions my site. My pathetic, sad-looking site that needs a better brand voice. So, it's definitely a tool that I think really sets the few writers who do it well apart from the rest of us.
Yeah, definitely. What else for you, Rob? What else?
Our whole interview with Sam Woods, should just like stop here and hit play, because we've talked to so many smart people, and I've listened to not only as we interview people, but then I cut the episodes together and I'm listening to it again, and then it shows up on my iPod, and Sam's is one that I've sort of saved to my iPod to listen to again and again. What he says about the things that motivate customer decisions and customer buying decisions in particular is something that I think I should listen to 20 or 30 times. It is such good advice. And he mentions a couple of resources that he's used to sort of learn this skill. Again, if you haven't heard that episode, you should probably just pause this one right now and go back and listen to it, because almost everything Sam says is gold and will make you a better writer.
Yeah, and I know we always talk about, well, I don't know if we always talk about it, but I always hear business owners talking about knowing your numbers. And, you know, what Sam talks about is knowing their numbers. So you should know your clients' numbers. And if you are working on a sales page for them, you should know what the conversion stats are, you know, how much they made from it, everything around a launch as far as numbers. And he mentions that, you know, if you're interviewing a potential client and they don't know their numbers, that is a red flag, and you should stay away from that project, because you want to work with clients who know their numbers, so then you can kind of position yourself and show your value based on those numbers and the impact of what you're going to do based on those numbers. So I took away from that I should start maybe even integrating a question in my inquiry form about their numbers. Like, maybe it's just a simple question, so I'm not prying too deeply, but just to kind of weed out people that maybe want this like killer launch plan, but they don't have the list and the marketing know-how to accomplish their goals yet.
Yeah, I think it's critical if we're going to be able to, as writers, demonstrate the value that we bring. If you don't have that sort of place where they're beginning, the numbers today, so that you can compare the numbers after whatever piece we create for them launches, it's really hard to demonstrate that, you know, you're worth more than just somebody who is being a hired gun to write copy. It may not be as applicable again to like blog posts and top of funnel type content, although there is a place for it there as well. You know, you want to see people sort of move through that funnel in a really deliberate way. But if you're going to, you know, pitch yourself as a conversion copywriter or a sales copywriter or somebody who is, you know, helping to grow a business and doing that kind of consulting, you really need to know the numbers. Let's have another one. We're running out of episodes, but I think there's a couple more.
I know, and I feel like we're missing a couple too. But that's okay. What I want to mention next is Hillary's episode, Hillary Weiss. So Hillary is just like this powerful copywriter that I always kind of say I want to be Hillary when I grow up, because she really works her tush off. And ever since I've known her, she just is the hardest worker and just like continuing to push and grow. And she's also had a lot of success at a young age because of that. And I think it just shows like you can have the best brand, but if you're not working and like just putting in the time and the sweat, you're not gonna make it. And Hillary's proven that if you do, you will. And so what I took from the conversation with her, though, is it's all about style. And Hillary is, you know, one of the best copywriters at just incorporating style into her brand, into her copywriting, and even just like when she shows up in real life, she is decked out. Like, her fingernails have decals on them, and like she's like,
that, just for the record, that wasn't a takeaway that I had from Hillary's episode.
I've seen her recently, and when she shows up, like, she matches her brand, and it is just like all powerful. And I notice that because I am hanging out in the same outfit like for 5 days in a row at home. So I pay attention to those things.
No, Hillary is a fantastic writer, and you're right. Given, you know, her age, you would think that she's got 10 more years of experience, you know, just on what she delivers, the way she, you know, talks and coaches others with her writing. She's made an awesome contribution within the Facebook group as well. And I agree that episode is one worth listening to.
Yeah. And she also mentions that she really infuses hip hop into her writing. And, we've talked about this before, you know, off the podcast show, just about the power of music. And like, I know she's inspired me to listen to new artists and to even listen to music more and really kind of branch out in order to find that creative inspiration that we all need.
So my last big takeaway was from the last episode that we just did with Danny Margulies. And I have to admit, I went into this episode sort of thinking there is no way that Danny could convince me that Upwork would be a great place to find clients and work, because it just sort of feels like the low price, cheap option where people, you know, take advantage of copywriters who don't know the real value that they're adding. And I'm not sure that I personally would want to do a business on Upwork, but I came away from that really with a little bit of a changed attitude. Danny's made it work for him, and I think it is the right place for some writers to build a following. And Danny shares what he called his crystal ball technique for attracting clients. And that is that when a client needs, you know, a blog post or a web page that talks about a particular subject, and he doesn't have that in his portfolio, he'll go and create a piece that's sort of similar, not exactly the same thing, but it's related, so that the customer can then read that sample piece and say, oh yeah, I can see that Danny could create something similar for me. And his argument was that that landed him more jobs than, you know, other writers would get. And while that may be a little extra work, it's a great way to build out a portfolio, and it's a good way, perhaps, for the right writers to launch their business and attract new clients.
Yeah, and it really does work. I feel like anytime I've landed a project, it's because that client had seen a similar project in my portfolio, or they had just stumbled upon it somehow. Because I think we want to have that match. I think we don't want to have to imagine what it could be. We just want to see it and have that proof, so it's easy sell. Well, I think as we wrap this up, I know we didn't cover every episode and there's a lot more to cover, but I think one last takeaway for me was just when we talked with Laura Belgray about her writing, you know, she mentioned that she has a crisis of confidence almost before every single client. And that just, I guess, gave me some relief to know that, you know, we're kind of, despite how experienced you are, we all have that at times. And so it's normal. And so I think, you know, I appreciated Laura mentioning that because I feel that all the time. And I'm sure many of you do as well. And so just to kind of know that we're all dealing with the doubts and the fear and, you know, just kind of move past it.
I think that's great. You know, a lot of writers suffer from, you know, a lack of confidence or even the imposter syndrome. And, you know, what do we have to do with, you know, these customers that we have? How do we advise them on the business? What do I know? And it's nice to hear people like Laura, who has such a thriving business and has, you know, success in television, in working one-on-one with clients, in teaching copywriting, to hear her say that she still struggles with that, I think is a relief to a lot of people.
All right, Rob. Well, I think that's a wrap. I'm really excited. I can't exaggerate that enough for to cover the next 10 episodes, and we'll probably jump on after the next 10, right?
Yeah, we've already talked to a couple people that we've got lined up, so I'm just going to go ahead and throw out a couple of names. But we've talked with Joel Kletke, who, again, we hung up the phone from Joel and just thought, wow, that was just such a great episode, so loaded with great advice that I'm excited to be sharing that. And that one comes out in the next week or so. We've talked with Roy Furr, who's a direct response copywriter that at least a few of the members of our club will recognize. But the advice that he throws out about retainer clients, and he walks us step by step through how he's grown and increased his pricing, you know, all the way from the beginning of his career to where he is now. And it's pretty impressive. Some of the stuff that he shares, I'm really excited about. And then do you want to share the person we talked with this morning?
Oh, Brian Kurtz. Yeah, that's why we were both really pumped when we got into this conversation. We just wrapped an interview with him, and he mentioned, and maybe you can describe this better, but he said he's the bridge. You know, he's focused on teaching based on his 34 years of experience in direct response. And he sees himself as kind of this bridge between the old world of direct response and then this new world of online marketing. And I don't think there are that many people that are the bridge and actively want to teach and help in the way that he does with his background and all of his knowledge and all of his connections. And so he's someone that you introduced me to, Rob, and I'm just so grateful that I'm now aware and kind of obsessed with him. And so I'm just really honored that he's a part of our show.
Yeah, he's kind of like the favorite uncle. He's got such great stories, and you just kind of want to sit at his knee and just say, Brian, go. And that's kind of what he did on the podcast. And we're excited to share that with the rest of the group. There are others as well that we haven't mentioned that we've got lined up. But if you have ideas of people that we should be talking to, if there are subjects that you want us to cover, drop into the Facebook group and just let us know, because we would love to reach out to, you know, other experts that maybe aren't in our group of contacts, and we'll see if we can't make that work.
And I feel like we should have a great wrap for the show. Let's just put some music on.
You've been listening to the Copywriter Club podcast with Kira Hug and Rob Marsh. Music for the show is a clip from Gravity by Whitest Boy Alive, available in iTunes. If you like what you've heard, you can help us spread the word by subscribing in iTunes and by leaving a review. For show notes, a full transcript, and links to our free Facebook community, visit thecopywriterclub.com. We'll see you next episode.